You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for November 7th, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live, dangling barefoot above the flames of despair. It's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
One day at a time, sweet Jesus, that's all I'm asking of you.
Number one, group hug.
Yeah.
Number two, buckle your armor and grab your sword. Fists in the air.
Yeah.
And number three, one day at a time, sweet Jesus.
And I'll go number four, which is if you need to take a break, take a break.
Yeah. Yep.
If you need to not be listening to us talk about politics and culture this week, don't feel obliged to. Yeah. Take a break. Rest. I think based on the letters we've gotten, a lot of people really want to hear this podcast.
Yeah.
But if you need to walk away and clear your head and take a break and stretch your bones, that's fine. We've been to this rodeo before. So. Oh boy, have we?
Before elections, chop wood, carry water.
Yeah.
After elections, chop wood, carry water, or fold towels.
Yeah. Damn good advice.
And Driftglass, not only did we have a voicemail before the election from Adam Green Urgent.
We did.
I know.
So I feel special.
Oh my God. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But Driftglass, my tweet got favorited by at Comedy Central.
Yes, it did.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, it did. Some intern got fired at Comedy Central.
Some intern got fired. We don't talk to those people.
No, she's on the list. You don't talk to her.
She's on the list.
Yeah. I'm on the list at MSNBC.
We're all on the list over there. But my tweet got favorited by at Comedy Central. My tweet was, great news for Jon Stewart.
And it is.
And it is.
It is such great news for Jon Stewart.
It is.
It really is.
Really is.
It's too bad Stephen Colbert is going off to become the real Stephen Colbert because, you know, this is he's looking forward to just a vintage season, I'm sure, for the next 2 years of comedy bits and funny stuff. But he can do all that sort of with a straighter face over at his new gig on Straight TV.
I hope so. I hope he will be more Bobby Kennedy than ever.
Because we really need people like this right now. Yep. I mean, I know Jon Stewart plays the, I'm just a comedian on basic cable. I'm not involved. But let's face it. We hang a lot of our weight on people like that.
Well, and I saw a bumper sticker on the internet today. Not anywhere around here. But it did say Fox News for comedy, Comedy Central for news.
Yeah.
That's really it.
This is bizarre. This is the bizarre world.
And I did something else this week that I haven't done in a long time. I actually wrote a long form post at my blog. And
yes, you did. And
you were one of the five people that read it. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
It was really good. And it was your blogiversary.
Yeah, it was my 10-year blogiversary on Tuesday. Yeah. So
you have been to this rodeo before.
I've been to this rodeo quite a bit. Yeah. So we are going to talk a little bit about the election.
Mm-hmm. Maybe quite a bit.
We lost the governor's race here in Illinois, and a couple of people wrote to us expressing concern. We're not on Medicaid anymore, so that's not going to affect us.
We might be tomorrow.
You never know. But the new governor is Bruce Rauner. He's a millionaire.
No.
Multimillionaire? Billionaire? Something like that.
Yes.
And we'll see how it goes. The news out of Illinois is mixed in that, yes, we lost the governor's race, but there is a Democratic supermajority in the legislature. So,
So nothing's going anywhere.
Well, unless he decides to play nice. And I said to someone the other day, you know, I lived in Massachusetts for a while Mitt Romney was governor, and he wasn't awful because there was a Democratic supermajority in the legislature.
Yeah. There was someone holding his leash.
Reform. He really went over above and beyond as far as a state governor would do to get everyone health insurance and worked with the legislature to get that done. So, you know, he also had binders full of women, so it wasn't all perfect, but.
Yeah.
You know, depending on how things go, it doesn't mean I'm going to like him personally, but it doesn't have to be all bad if the if he wants to get anything done. And it just depends on whether he wants to govern or whether this is just, no, I now have governor on my resume and I'm done, you know?
Well, we've had, you know, many 25 years straight of Republican governors.
Mm-hmm. No mm-hmm.
And there were some good ones. There were some bad ones. One went to jail, followed by a Democrat, the Democrat who went to jail. So, you know, Illinois is a basket case when it comes
mm-hmm.
to politics.
Mm-hmm.
It is weird to say that the corrupt Democratic machine is the thing that's keeping the crazy hedge fund manager in check.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like I think it was like two thieves running through a narrow door.
You know, you just said it all right there. That is the state of Illinois.
It is. It really is. Two criminals running through a narrow door and they get caught in the door. And, you know, they're both trapped in there with each other. They can't move. So there's this weird symmetry and kind of poetic justice to the fact that Mike Madigan mm-hmm. is going to be the guy that keeps Bruce Reimer in check.
Because they're both, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about the meaning of the word compromise, because.
Yeah.
First of all, I don't like Chuck Todd anyway, but this weekend I was particularly ready to kick in my television because he had Rand Paul on, and Rand Paul lied to his face.
Yeah. Well, Rand Paul was everywhere.
Paul was everywhere. But on the Chuck Todd show,
He lied.
Meet the Press, he lied. And he said Democrats are responsible for gridlock.
Right.
Which anyone with a brain should have that brain hurting when you hear that. Yeah.
And, you know, I wrote a whole post
about
it. Just that quote. Well, just the quote and the one that follows
it. The one that follows it was, you know, this is how Chuck Todd calls out a lie, is to say, well, some people say that, you know, with the shutdown of the government and Ted Cruz and so forth, both sides are responsible.
That was his rebuttal, and it was the most diamond perfect summary mm-hmm. of everything that's wrong with the media. First of all, you have Rand Paul on, you're not asking him any questions of any substance.
Driftglass, he's the guy who is blocking the Surgeon General appointment personally.
Right. Oh, I know, and there's so many other interesting things you could. Without playing gotcha.
You don't have to play gotcha. You can say, look, this Ebola crisis is something that a lot of Republicans are worried about. You might want to stop block? Do you have any opinion about stopping your blockage, your personal blockage of the Surgeon General appointment so that we have a Surgeon General to deal with this problem?
If Chuck Todd got conked on the head and woke up and forgot he was Chuck Todd and thought he was a journalist, mm-hmm. there's a whole bunch of questions he might want to ask Rand Paul.
Yeah.
And then ask him. He's basically David Gregory with bad hair. he does the same crap. He doesn't follow up. He lets people get away on the right, especially with murder. But this perfect example of Rand Paul tells a flat out bald faced typical Republican lie on national television live in front of everybody, and Chuck Todd automatically gives him half the field. Mm-hmm. Reflexively says, well, you know, some people would say other things, and it's pretty much both sides are to blame here, right? And that's it.
And then went on to talk about messaging and labeling the Republican Party like dominoes, right? That was it.
There you have. This is the two person con game mm-hmm. that they play, which is one side claims to be absolutely pure, blames everything on liberals, blames everything on Democrats, and the other one and the journalists, the referees here. Automatically tag us with half of their atrocities.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? This is why I wrote out a long post this week called This is the David Brooks Election.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is the David Brooks Election. Mm-hmm. This is the election where it was 20 years ago, this election cycle, when Rush Limbaugh was celebrated as the guy who got the Republicans mm-hmm. the Congress, mm-hmm. who won the House of Representatives. He was made an honorary member of the House of Representatives. They kissed his ring. So just remember this when your conservative friends and relatives poo-poo your critical words about Rush Limbaugh as just an entertainer. He's just on the radio. Bullshit. Mm-hmm. 20 years ago, you fuckers threw him a parade.
Mm-hmm. And you handed him a plaque on the floor of the Congress. Yep.
And called him the majority maker and lined up to give speeches to say how, but for you, Rush, we wouldn't have won. You're the guy who did it for us, Rush. It was Rush Limbaugh and Newt Gingrich, mind you. But they put all the credit for their winning on the fact that Rush Limbaugh nationalized their bullshit agenda. Mm-hmm. And Rush Limbaugh did that by just fucking pounding liberals. He and from inside the Congress, it was Newt Gingrich and Newt and all of his little Newtlets, all of his little clones out there all the time, everywhere, saying liberals are traitors, liberals are yellow, liberals are welfare cheats, liberals hate this country, every single fucking time they got in front of a microphone. Mm-hmm. And it worked. Mm-hmm. So that was the strategy 20 years ago. It was the Rush Limbaugh election.
And Drift Glass, I want to ask you about that, because this is what I mean by talking about compromise, the meaning of the word compromise. Uh-huh. Because what I see happening in 2015, once this Congress is in session, mm-hmm. is them proposing, as Reince Priebus said twice, not once, but twice on The Daily Show, and why Jon Stewart had Reince Priebus on, I have no idea. But Reince Priebus said, Keystone Pipeline. Oh, it's a great night. We're going to get the Keystone Pipeline passed. Like, wait a minute. That's the first thing on your mind after winning the election was
that's
what the Koch brothers want him to do.
When you hear Republicans say jobs program, they mean
Keystone Pipeline.
That is literally all they mean. They mean the, as Charlie Pierce says, the continent spanning death funnel.
Yeah, the death funnel.
That's exactly all they mean.
Right. Let's turn the air in the United States into the air over Beijing. Let's just do it.
Let's just do
profit.
It. And that's going to be good for America.
And so that's, if the Democrats block that, then the Democrats are clearly responsible for the gridlock.
They're obstructing.
That and Social Security privatization what is that? Simpson-Bowles.
Yeah,
Simpson-Bowles. And if we block those, then we're the obstructionists, right?
One of the things I wrote today was a post called Stupid Shit the New Republic Says. Mm-hmm. But it's the same thing. This idea that, well, now that Republicans are in office, they have to govern. They're bound.
No,
after all, Democrats can block their stuff now. And if they do that, well, then Republicans will be blamed for it. And I just want to go down to their editorial office and slap them around. Go, okay, there's this thing called the OKR, which is the template for all behavior in the media, which is it's okay if you're a Republican. Mm-hmm. And so when the GOP filibusters everything, the story is Congress is broken.
Mm-hmm.
When the GOP filibusters everything, what the media reports is, well, you need 67 votes to pass anything. And they just shrug that off as if that's part of the Constitution.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When Democrats filibuster, the story will be Democrats are obstructing the governing majority that the Republican Party gave to them. And if the Democrats object, the story will be how Democrats are in principle douchebags because now you're using a tactic that you used to complain about. And the story will be how Democrats are poor losers and bitching about this and bitching about that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way to win with these people.
Well,
there's no way to argue with these people.
And I have felt more strongly than ever that the analogy of an abused spouse fits in why Democrats have been behaving the way they have, which is, it's not abuse in the sense of beating, in the sense of hitting, in the sense of even verbal abuse. It's what happens when you have a partner who lies all the time and is a compulsive liar. They lie about their drinking. They lie about their carousing. They lie about spending. They lie about everything. They just lie. And your mother, Chuck Todd, comes over to visit you and you're complaining that, I married this guy and all he does is lie. And I cannot function. I cannot run this house. I cannot raise my kids. I cannot keep my job. I cannot do anything to make my life work because the partner in life that I have constantly lies. And your mother, Chuck Todd, who's supposed to be on the side of getting things moving forward or at least saying what's really going on, says, well, you know, maybe if you compromise with him a little more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe if you saw it from his perspective, you know, that's your opinion.
Yeah.
And this is the person who's supposed to be the one.
The neutral.
Who is at least neutral, right?
Uh-huh.
At least neutral, or at the very best, is supporting the House working, you know, the Senate working, the government working, making things happen.
I would like this to be a healthy relationship.
Right. I would like to be a healthy country. And
step one, let's identify the problem. Yeah. And we're not.
Is, you know, maybe if you dress nicer, maybe if the house was a little cleaner when he got home, he wouldn't lie so much.
Yeah.
And that's why Democrats, I think, on Wednesday morning were stunned in a state of shock that we've been lied to for years and years and years.
We dressed pretty.
And as one commenter, Nicole Bell at Crooks and Liars said, you know, why do we expect voters to not vote based on what they hear on the news?
Right.
That's what informed voters are supposed to do, right?
Yeah.
When Chuck Todd says, yeah, but you know, Rand Paul, it's really both sides are to blame for this.
Yeah.
For the fact that you just lied to me. And we're sort of just paralyzed by that. And
that's why I call this the David Brooks election.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I base that off of a Isaac Asimov short story called Franchise. When in the future, the multivac computer, which is 7 stories tall and hidden underground, is so precise and so accurate that we don't need to have elections anymore. We can narrow it down by sampling and polling and data points to one person.
Mm-hmm.
And that one person will decide. They're just asked a series of questions. They go away. And that based on those questions, the answer to the questions, that computer decides who the president's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But
wasn't that a movie also? I think it was.
It sort of was. I think it was with Kevin Costner.
Right.
It came and went very fast.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that elections in the future, in this science fiction future, came to be known by the person who cast that vote.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
As opposed to the president.
Yeah.
This is the David Brooks election. Mm-hmm. Because for the reason Republicans won in 1994 was relentless blitzkrieg of liberals are traitors, liberals are liars, liberals hate America, liberals, 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 from inside the Congress and from outside of the Congress with no opposition. There was no MSNBC, mm-hmm. despite the fact that MSNBC really doesn't do opposition anymore. It's completely captive, but for 3 people, mm-hmm. of a corporate message that is inimical to Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
There was no Air America. There was nobody pushing back against this message. So Republicans won 1994. They came to power. 20 years later, what has been the relentless pounding blitzkrieg message from the media? Both sides, both sides, both sides.
Mm-hmm.
It's Washington. Washington's broken. Politicians are failing us. Politicians, politicians. Washington is bad. Both sides do it. It's really both sides. And the leader of this mob is David Brooks.
Mm-hmm.
And so guess what? The message that Washington is broken and we need to do something to fix Washington is what dispirited people. Well, the whole system's fucked, so let's just throw people out.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just get rid of them. Let's try something new. Let's just shake it up a little bit. If the message had been Republicans are breaking the government, which is the honest truth of the story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not asking for anything other than journalists to do their fucking job. Then I have a strong feeling the outcome might have been slightly different. But that isn't the message, and that is not allowed to be the message. And that's the $64 billion question. Why can't Chuck Todd tell the truth on television?
Yeah. Why does Chuck Todd have to say it takes 67 votes to do anything in the Senate rather than Republicans have filibustered over 250 times, including the appointment of a Surgeon General?
And when Republicans are on his show, ask them, why have you chosen to break the federal government as a tactic to get
mm-hmm.
elected?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And don't allow them to say, but we haven't done that, but the Democrats.
But the Democrats, yeah.
But that's, you know, that's never going to happen.
Yeah.
And let me put a little aside here. This happens somewhat on the left, too, in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
I got into a very interesting exchange with Jason Linkins. From the Huffington Post.
Oh.
It was about Tavis Smiley and Glenn Greenwald and that crowd. And
who told people in this election cycle to not vote.
Right.
Punish the Democrats.
And Barack Obama, worse than Bush, worse mm-hmm. than Bush, worse than Bush.
Yeah.
And if you accept the premise that constant, repeated propagandizing over and over again actually influences people, like we always say Fox does, mm-hmm. then you have to sort of agree that maybe saying that Barack Obama is worse than George Bush over and over and over again, no matter what happens, ignoring every other issue but the two issues you care about and obsessing over that for a fucking year.
And verbally abusing anyone that disagrees with you
slaughtering anybody who mm-hmm. dares step off the reservation might have had an influence on demoralizing some people on the left.
Mm-hmm.
And Jason Lincoln's response was, I don't think anybody. So what you're saying is people sat at home reading The Intercept and got bummed out and didn't vote. And that was more or less it. That was his mm-hmm. tweet back to me. And I said, maybe you're forgetting, because that really is just the laziest answer I could imagine. Mm-hmm. And because it's just the Intercept. I mean, who reads that shit anyway?
Yeah.
What, you don't remember him being on MSNBC every other day? You don't remember him being on Fox News? You don't remember him being on every fucking station on the planet? You don't remember him being in The Guardian? You don't remember Wallace Shawn flying to Brazil to give him a private performance because Wallace Shawn had come to believe that if Glenn Greenwald came to the U.S., Obots were going to lock
him up. We're going to have him arrested at Supermax prison.
That was a fact. That was just a fact. It's just, he's going to get locked up because he has the Snowden documents. And I love Wallace Shawn.
Yes, I do.
Going on Democracy Now every other day to say worse than Bush, worse than every article, everything that happened in the press, anything that bad that happened. There was one paragraph about the thing and the rest of it about, well, this is probably because of Barack Obama and drones. Now, you are free to say all those things. I would not ever want to restrict anyone's freedom to say such things. I might even agree with such things. But if you do nothing but pound the Democratic Party and Barack Obama for a year, mm-hmm. among the people who read you, who are mostly liberals, and also slide into there that maybe the best thing to do would be to step away from the election, let Republicans win a few times, and then something unicorns, and then things will happen. Then when the day comes that you get what you want, this is what you wanted. Mm-hmm. You wanted the Democrats to lose. They've lost. You wanted them to get pummeled. They've been pummeled. All right. You got the world you want. Now accept the accolades of the people around you. Don't say, oh, I had nothing to do with it. It wasn't my idea. I had no. Well, you know what? No snowflake ever felt responsible for the avalanche. But part of it's you. And if you can't man up and admit that, then, you know, go do your thing. But don't expect me to pretend that this didn't happen. I don't pretend that Chuck Todd's not a liar. I'm not going to pretend that a bunch of liberals stomping up and down on the president of the United States for a year had no effect whatsoever on anyone.
Well, so. And I also think that Senate candidates running away from the president.
Oh, yeah.
Just because of bigoted voters was cowardly.
Yeah.
And a mistake. And Alison Lundgren Grimes might have gotten a few more Hispanic votes out of her state.
Who knows?
She'd stood up and said, look, we got to have immigration reform that benefits Mexicans.
Mm-hmm. And why did they run away?
Stood up like a liberal. Because they're why chicken.
Because he was toxic.
Yeah.
No. And because both sides.
Yeah. Well, that's what they were told by Chuck Todd.
That's exactly right. This was the David Brooks election.
They're told. Yeah. They believe what David Brooks tells them. Yeah.
Run against Washington. Who is Washington? Well, the president's Washington. Run against the president. All right. As if we didn't figure out you're a Democrat and this is your party. So
I want to bring up what you wrote, Driftglass, also about Joe Scarborough. Because I thought it was so funny.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Yeah.
Apparently, there is no racism because Barack Obama's been elected twice.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like there was no civil war because Lincoln was elected twice.
Exactly. That means there's no civil war. So.
No civil war. And again, nobody. Tomorrow morning, Joe Scarborough will still have a job. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow morning, the executives who write paychecks for Rachel Maddow and for Chris Hayes will write Joe Scarborough a paycheck too. And they'll give him another three-hour block in the morning to just piss in everyone's face. Mm-hmm. Just lie his fool ass off.
Yep.
And so I actually got into a tussle would be an unfair thing because Chris Hayes never responds to my tweets, never responds to my emails, has never responded to me at all ever. So it'd be unfair to call it a back and forth because he just doesn't do that anymore. He just doesn't respond to people like me. He was bemused by the same things that bemused me. Mm-hmm. He was sort of freaked out and frustrated that we don't that this bullshit way we report on elections and the way we talk about issues is so prevalent. Why is it that we can't do this or that? And my response was, go down the hall and ask Chuck Todd. He's your colleague. Go down the hall and talk to Mark Halperin. Go down the hall. These are the guys who work in your building. The same advice I have for Rachel Maddow. If this is pissing you off so much, if putting Paul Wolfowitz on the air is pissing you off so much, walk down the hall and ask your colleague why they did it. Mm-hmm. And then come on the camera and tell us about it. Because if you can go to Afghanistan and ride around in a war zone, you can surely spend 10 minutes walking 40 feet down the hall and asking Joe Scarborough, hey, Joe, why the fuck do you lie every morning on my TV station? But then again, the worst that's going to happen to you in Afghanistan is you might get shot at. You put a camera on Joe Scarborough and ask him a hard question, you're going to get fired.
Yep.
You're going to go the way of Martin Bashir. You're going to go the way of Alec Baldwin, Phil Donahue. Your ass will be cashed. So that's why you don't do it. I mean, unless there's another explanation that you aren't sharing with the rest of the class, that's the only thing I can think of. And if you're a captive of that, if you're not allowed to talk about the most important issue when it comes to election and politics and culture, then you're tainted. I can't trust. How can I trust you if you won't tell the truth about this vital issue that you clearly care so much about? So let's move on, shall we?
Yeah, I've got angry. We've got some letters to read. I wanted to read a couple of tweets from election night, if you don't mind.
No, absolutely.
I hope you had a good birthday, by the way. A lot of people wished you happy birthday.
Right, wonderful birthday.
Thank you so much.
Only problem with my fundraiser is I haven't had 5 minutes in sequence to write thank you notes.
No, you and I'm way behind on my thank you notes. So maybe this week you and I agree that we'll do that.
Maybe
no?
Well, we have to agree not to do 22 things on Saturday.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. And we have sleepovers this weekend, so that might not happen. there was a, and I'm sorry, I'm looking at these on my Twitter stream and they don't say who the original tweeter was for some reason. But someone tweeted, I tell a guy at the Roberts/Brownback party, so this is Kansas, you must be feeling pretty good. He chuckles, we're bankers. We don't give a shit.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay. And the other one was, so voters want a higher minimum wage, legal pot, abortion access, and GOP representation.
Yeah.
Okay, then.
Yeah.
They also, in four places, including a town in Texas, voted in favor of fracking bans. So congratulations.
Not in Illinois.
No.
Nope.
Welcome to Rounderland. I'll bet that's on his list.
Whatever department gave
fracking,
it today.
Gave it's okay.
Yep.
So get ready to light your faucet on fire. Yep. Yeah. But we have some letters that came in since the election that we wanted to read. So why don't we start? I'll read Melinda's, and then you read the one from T.S., all right? And then we'll go from there. Melinda wrote to us and said, my God, I have never been this devastated after an election in my life. I see Quinn lost as well. And Melinda is from a red state. I'll just say that. Yeah. She says, when I'm functional again, I'll send you guys Plan B. Wish we could all do a group hug right now. Yes. And it's because of Melinda that I started this podcast today with group hug.
Yeah. Well, and we don't have any need for Plan B here. We don't have any reproductive issues in this household. So,
Mama's ship has sailed.
Yeah, yeah. But I got three great stepkids, and I'm a happy kids
and a postmenopausal wife, and
I'm a happy
menopause
guy.
Menopause hit me like a truck, but it's over pretty much.
I may quote Archie Bunker.
Yeah.
If you're gonna change right now. You got whatever 1 minute.
Oh, let's not get into that. I don't want to talk about my body right now.
No. Well, I'll just say this. So we are we're hanging on by our nails. I'm working a couple of part-time jobs.
Yeah.
Basically paper routes, but things like I do that I enjoy and I can sleep at night. And three stepkids and the governor, our governor, Governor Pat, who I like, and I know some people in his administration like them too. Just lost. But I have three wonderful stepkids and a wonderful family and a great wife. And on balance, I'm a pretty happy guy. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't be because I'm Irish and I'm and I'm underemployed.
Why don't you read T.S.'s letter and let's.
But I'm just saying. I'm saying that it's a really good time to count your blessings.
Yes,
it's a really good time to sit down and think about just how many valuable things in your life have not been taken away from you, and just how, if you've been through this before, how much worse things were this time in 2004.
And I would like everyone who's feeling really angry about the election to get to work on helping someone less fortunate.
Yeah.
I knit shawls for cancer patients and people going through cancer treatment. Mm-hmm. I know people who work in hospitals and hospice areas.
Uh-huh.
Damn it. When you walk into a hospice, nobody gives a shit about what happened on the election. I'm telling you, they do not care.
No.
They're there to make sure people are comfortable and are ending their lives with dignity. And
there are 10 good causes within driving distance or walking distance of your house.
Yep.
Pick one. It doesn't mean
do something nice for yourself too.
Yeah.
Drift glass. I bought one skein of yarn this week.
Oh my God. Just one?
Online. And I hardly ever, buying yarn online is really dangerous because you can really go overboard. But this one skein, this is really cool. Webs, which is a Massachusetts company, at yarn.com. I'm going to give them a plug because...
Everyone should know, I'm just hearing about this now.
at yarn.com, they are accepting pre-orders for one skein of sock yarn. It is Madeline Tosh. It's a special colorway that they have, and you have to pre-order it because the company that dyed the yarn is donating 100% of their profits to Doctors Without Borders.
Oh, good.
And the retail company, the yarn.com store, has decided that they are also going to donate 100% of their profits to Doctors Without Borders to help with the Ebola crisis. So
the yarn is awesome, isn't it?
And the yarn will not give you Ebola.
Uh-huh.
They should call it Ebola. That's what they should do. They didn't. I don't know why they didn't call the yarn, the colorway, Ebola, but they didn't. Anyway, but I thought that was so cool that they were giving back and helping. I mean, that's really a positive thing to do in a situation like Ebola is,
And you got a skein of yarn out of it, which you're going to...
I got a skein of sock yarn that I'm probably going to knit something for a homeless person in Springfield. Yes. So.
So. And you know what?
It's made out of Ebola.
It's made out of Ebola. Take it. I don't want it. And the thing is, every step along the way, you feel pretty good about what you're doing.
Yeah.
It, you know, find something like that to do. Find, you know, elections are going to come and go.
Yep.
But the good you do at a good cause really does last a lifetime. So let's get on with letter reading.
Fucking cheerful here. Let's get back to some despair.
Let's get back to being depressed. You know, I'm sorry. I'm happily married. I got a great family, and I'm ebullient. So deal with it.
All right. T.S. writes. Go ahead.
T.S. writes. Here is how the media conversation goes. The Repubs say there is so much gridlock in Washington, both sides, and the Dems finish the sentence with both sides. Then they get thanked for their time pushing the bullshit boulder back up the hill from down it. Because, you know, it can't move unless both sides push it back up the hill and set it up for the next hour's content. I think he means contest.
No, content. He's talking about TV hours.
Content.
The next hour's content, yeah.
When two more people in makeup make the same point. They're selling a grandfather clock pendulum swing that they know it's an hourglass with sand falling down.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's true. And I read this is a clip from a longer email. I read the whole
thing. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are places in the TV wasteland where you will find people occasionally making good sense.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you will find on the 57 channels and nothing on.
Right.
On the broad wasteland that is entertainment television, you'll find a Gotham out there somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Last week's episode of Gotham was really good.
Rock. You'll find a detective out there.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find Mad Men every now and then. There is quality to be found, but unfortunately, you won't find it on your TV schedule that this is the hour when people aren't crazy.
Yeah.
But there are people out there who are making sense. I like Chris Hayes. I'm really pissed that he's not on Saturday and Sunday mornings anymore, because that was a masterclass in liberal policy wonk discussion with laughs. It was fun. I enjoyed it. It isn't fun anymore. Listening to Steve Kornacki read poll numbers at me is not fun. It's basically meet the press light,
mm-hmm.
and I get nothing out of it. So it's possible to do those things, and those people are still out there. I love Dr. Maddow. I love Dr. Rachel. The reason I get pissed at Rachel Maddow is there's this thing in front of her that I know she wants to punch, and she can't punch it.
You're frustrated for her.
I really
as well as at her. I know that.
I see the collar she wears.
Hey, Drickglass, we're at 56 minutes.
Let's keep reading, shall we?
Our friend Robert writes to us and said, "Now for a bit of triage. My office unit has 60 people, and I usually lunch with 5 to 7 of them regularly. I am the old man of the group. I'm closer to 40, and they are all under 31. And here is what I can grasp. It's about the money. It's about pragmatism and the lack thereof. If a conservative idea will work, we should use it, and vice versa. They do not trust the intentions of politicians. Being in office is more important than doing the job." I added that the art of statecraft and governing is lost.
Yeah, true.
Now, this next sentence is something that really rang true with me. They think both sides do it, and by do it, they mean take money for votes and only care about being in power.
Yep.
And I really do hear that.
Yep.
They can smell BS. I will hand that to them, but they often get squirrel.
Yeah. Yep.
And I'm sorry, but with iPhones these days, that is so easy to think that you are being active by, you know, reading your liberal Facebook feed and you're not doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
They want to see something untarnished and inspired, not hackneyed and contrived. Only two out of my group of eight, myself included, voted. Out of the eight of us, three are self-identified conservatives. They really want to know why we can all sit together and work through problems and find ideas to try, yet our government cannot or will not. Lastly, they refuse to hold their noses and vote for the lesser of two evils, so they tuned out.
Yeah, yeah.
That's very helpful feedback. It really is. And I do believe that those 20-somethings think, yeah, both sides do it. That means they take money for votes and only care about being in power. Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you there. Okay.
Yep.
Why don't you read Kent's letter?
Kent writes, "Time and again, I've wondered why the abused Republican voters continue to vote for their abusers. Many members of my family are Republicans and buy into all of those ridiculous notions about Democrats, i.e. they raise taxes and spend money as if it's going out of style. Some of them are even tremendously harsh in their views on Democrats. Why can't Republican voters understand that the party they support does not care about them or their children's future? It never ceases to amaze me why anyone who isn't rich, white, male would vote for any Republican running for office. I find myself emotionally and psychologically spent after yesterday's drubbing. I have been very vocal on social media for people to support Democrats. Of course, I received some comments from a few Republican friends and family members using Republican sound bites. I even one commenter saying, blah, blah. It's very tough. I've even been entertaining the notion of toning down, if not stopping altogether, my social media support for Democrats. Not because I think they can't win, but because Republican supporters don't care about facts and are some of the nastiest people I've come across. Yeah, I understand progress takes time and that for progress to happen, people need to fight for the causes they believe in each and every day. On a brighter note, two wolf hunting proposals were defeated, and my county's health service millage received a renewal in funding. I don't know what that means, but I hope that's really good.
Yep.
Thank you so much for the podcast and for the work you do. Downloading and listening to your podcast every Friday is something I always look forward to. God bless you, too. Well, thank you. God bless you, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Jonathan writes, "First off, I'm admittedly pessimistic and cynical to a fault at times. But the reason I am so glass half empty today is not because of the loss or even the margin by which it took place. What bothers me most is the long list of sociopaths that were just put into elected office all across the country. Mm-hmm. Sam Brownback drove Kansas into a brick wall at 150 miles per hour. Colorado voted down a personhood amendment, yet sent personhood's poster boy, Cory Gardner, to the Senate." And as an aside to that, I love what Wonkette said. They said, "America closes a Michelle Bachmann window and opens a Joni Ernst door."
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. It really is.
It is.
It's like there is a law of conservation of crazy.
Yeah, of crazy. We got to have one in there, right? Uh-huh. Continuing. "Recently, my girlfriend had just moved into a new apartment, and we were getting ready to take off for the day for a hike at a nearby state park. I went down to the car a little before her, and as I was approaching the door, I saw two well-dressed men, one of African and one of Middle Eastern descent, standing in the apartment entrance. And then I saw an elderly woman halfway hiding behind a wall having a conversation with them. It was obvious to me they were there to inquire about renting, but the woman was refusing to let them in so they could visit the office." Now, what she's doing is totally illegal.
Yeah.
"My girlfriend came down a few seconds later without a second thought, opened the door for them."
Yeah.
"The look of horror on the woman's face when this happened is something I won't soon forget. I felt like I had, possibly for the first time, really gotten a look at how subtle and rancid racism in this country really is. When the results came in from Illinois last night and I saw that Pat Quinn had been defeated, my first thoughts were of you and your three children." Oh, thank you. "I've never met you and likely never will, but in my head, I consider you friends and couldn't help but wonder how Rauner's policies were going to affect your family. we're going to be lighting our faucets on fire. Yeah. What's going to happen?
Free gas for everyone.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I hate feeling this way, but nights like Tuesday make me have contempt for a significant portion of our country. As a collective population, we are scared, paranoid, entitled, and more easily manipulated than a child in a Toys R Us store. And sometimes I wonder if the Republicans are all we as a country deserve. As George Carlin once said, garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah.
All the best, Jonathan. Well, thank you, Jonathan. We have a little more hope than that for our country, but I love hearing about your girlfriend just opening the door for people. And
to terrorists. With Ebola, probably.
Ebola. Uh-huh. All right. And finally, uh-huh, I'm going to read this one. Dan in Chicago. He's a longtime listener and friend, and met him through the podcast. And he sends us a holiday card with pictures of his beautiful children every year. His wife's a Facebook friend. It's just awesome. We're so grateful, by the way, to have a relationship with all of you out there as a result of this podcast. And you bet your bippy we're going to keep podcasting, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
every Friday.
We need you. We need you. You want to listen to us. We want to hear from you. So mm-hmm, we need each other. Dan in Chicago wrote us the day after and said, I figured today was a good day to make a donation to your podcast.
Good guess, Dan.
All the best to you and yours. Life is good, regardless of what happens in Springfield or Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Love, Dan. And thank you, Dan. And thank you for your contribution. Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Mo. Mo is sister to Eeny Meeny and the late Miney.
Okay.
And she was sent in by Lee. And you know Lee from Mexico. He's an expat.
Yeah.
And he's one of our longtime early listeners and supporters.
Yeah. Hey, Lee.
Writes us all the time. He got Mo and Eeny Meeny and Miney from Anita's Animales, which is a local rescue shelter in Mexico.
Cool.
Mo is an affectionate, adorable tuxedo cat who often meows for attention. You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. As you can tell, we love hearing from you, so please write us. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air unless you say otherwise.
You know what? We get remarkably little hate mail.
We really do. We get remarkably little.
I'd say it's like Robert Heinlein said. An insult is like a strong drink. It only affects you if you accept it.
Mm-hmm. But drink less. These election results are all your fault.
Probably.
Drones.
Well, here's the thing. This is why I can't be president. Number 9,800 on the list of reasons I cannot be president ever.
Okay.
Because the midterm poll results, mm-hmm, as I understand them, show that the Obama coalition didn't show up.
Yeah.
That there's this spike. You know, when he's on the ticket, a bunch of people show up. When he's not on the ticket, people don't show up. And it's just that simple. I mean, there's a lot of Republican strategizing, and they did a lot of very smart things this year, like, as Charlie Pierce points out, taught their lunatics to wear shoes in public, basically.
Yeah.
There was a drilling session that S.E. Cupp was part of that showed them video of Sharon Engel and people like that making stupid mistakes, and just said, don't let this happen to you, and taught them, don't talk crazy in public. Not stop being crazy, just stop doing it in public. And
apparently Joni Ernst really learned how to do that and ran a fairly good campaign.
She did. As long as no one reported on it, you know, this is on her past.
Yeah, exactly.
And what she said, she learned all
and everybody
the right
backed
answers.
Away from
everything.
Birth control and the crazy talk about personhood.
Yeah, they just
all the Senate candidates that won said, oh, no, not my personhood. Well, you sponsored it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm not for that. Oh,
and
okay, well, then we'll vote for you. Okay.
They got away with it. But the reason I can't be president, because it's so clear what happened. Structurally, there was a lot of problems with a lot of races. It's probable that Democrats would have lost the Senate just because of the way the states are organized. This is a race where the Confederacy played a big part.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot more turnout, 2012 level turnout, would have made a very big difference.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't show up. Yeah. They didn't show for lots of different reasons, some of which I've ranted about already. So if I'm president, and mind you, Barack Obama is a much more even-tempered man than I am or I will ever be, I'm going to sign the first bill, five bills that come across my desk. I don't care what they are. Space-based laser platforms, a billion miles of razor wire, sharks with frickin' lasers in their heads patrolling the borders, costing us $1 trillion for the rest of time. I don't care. Whatever Mitch McConnell puts across my desk, I'm going to sign it. And when the base...
Keystone Pipeline? Because you know Keystone Pipeline is going to be attached to every single bill.
If I may quote a famous baseball quote, let's play two. Why can't we have two Keystone Pipelines coming down from Canada? Why just one, Blue Gal? Why think small? Wouldn't that double the number of jobs, double the number of opportunities?
I'm so glad you're not president.
Yeah. And when the base lost its shit, my question would be, where the fuck were you on election day?
Yeah.
Where the fuck were you on election day when we needed you? You were at home jerking off to your purity troll, complaining about things that I did wrong. You're right. I did them wrong. But why are you punishing this country?
This is exactly why you're not allowed to be. Exactly. You will never be elected to office because you're never allowed to blame the voter for anything.
No.
You can't. It's rule number one of politics. You're never allowed to blame the voter.
I'm giving them credit. I'm saying this is what you wanted. You stayed home. You voted with your feet to put Mitch McConnell in charge of the Senate. Congratulations.
See, you're mad. You're still mad.
I'm validating. I'm underwriting your decision. Yeah. You chose this. Live with it.
And, hey, Drift Class.
Yeah, Blue Gal.
How are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, you know, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties have no intention of going galt. But any more elections like this and they may go full Noonan.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Okay, Science Fiction University. I have some questions for you, Driftglass, but first I would like to let everyone know what the answer was last week to your science fiction question.
Oh, there was no last week, Blue Gal.
Yes, there was.
There's only eternal now. There's only the eternal moment.
Yeah, you had a challenge for Dogface Herman and the rest of our listeners.
I did.
And the answer of where that music came from was Lou Reed was the producer of the album. It was based on an Edgar Allan Poe writing story, The Valley of Unrest, and it is on YouTube.
That's good. I really
and
like it.
Dogface Herman didn't quite get it right. Then he went and looked it up, and he said, oh, it's this. I know it's this now. Okay.
And now he has to go buy the album.
Yeah, that's what he said. I have to go buy the album now. Yeah. Cursed Driftglass.
It's the best. I'm sure it's the best cut on there, but I mean, it was that intersection of Lou Reed and Edgar Allan Poe, so how am I not going to get that?
Right. So I was looking for some more traditional Science Fiction University questions for you today.
Yeah.
I found an animated series that was on for possibly three or four episodes on Adult Swim back in 2010 called Welcome to Eltingville.
Okay.
It takes place in a comic book store, a bunch of nerds, and two nerds are competing for a Boba Fett figurine, and they decide to have an epic sci-fi trivia battle with each other.
Okay.
It goes on for about 7 minutes, and of course, this being the internet, several people transcribed the battle and the questions
Being this is essentially radio, the animated series might do us a lot of good.
Someone went ahead and transcribed these questions, so I have taken a few of them out of there. And then one of the people that transcribed the questions and answers from this show said, this sucks because you don't have any science fiction novels in this, because they're comic book guys. So he added some more trivia questions to the list, and I have borrowed from him the guy's name. The guy's handle is Purple Hymnal.
Okay.
So Purple Hymnal has some questions in here, and then there are also some from the epic sci-fi trivia battle in the Adult Swim pilot of Welcome to Eltingville. That's where all this comes from.
As a caveat, I was not a comic book guy.
Okay.
I'm not a comic book guy.
Yeah,
I appreciate
these are not comic book questions. I edited this out to leave out the comic book questions and give you mostly science fiction and pulp culture.
To be clear. Yeah. I'm not a comic book snob.
Right.
I appreciate them. I understand their message. I understand how elegant and how novellic and how operatic they can be. I just never memorized them to the level of detail that I could. But I know that Harlan Ellison is a huge comic book fan.
Oh,
he's a comic book writer.
He gives them away on Halloween, right?
He does. He does. So, you know, I respect the genre. I just never had the time to get into the genre.
All right. And now we're going to have this lightning round, Driftglass. Are you ready?
Here I was all geared up for music.
All right. No, it's not music. It's questions. All right. Here we go. Name the theme park from Westworld.
Well, there's Tomorrowland. Is one of them, and Rome Land, I think, is one of them.
Oh.
And Westworld, I think, is one of them. Westerly.
The answer they give is Delos.
Oh, absolutely right. The name of the island that they go to is Delos. That is absolutely
Delos.
Right.
Okay.
With Josh Brolin's dad.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Now here's another one. Who are the lizard men from the Land of the Lost?
They are the I can see them clearly in my eye. They're the Sleestaks.
Sleestak, that's right. All right. What was Galactica 1980's time slot?
Oh, Tuesday night at 7.
7 is right. Sunday nights. 7 p.m. ABC.
I almost never watched it. It was just awful. But the Battlestar Ponderosa, as it has been coming
to TV. All right. Yes. Who are the Ents, E-N-T-S?
The Ents are the giant talking, walking trees in Lord of the Rings.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
We know Frank Gorshin played the Riddler on the Batman TV show.
Uh-huh.
But who played Falseface?
I want to say Otto Preminger, but that would be wrong. I don't know.
Malachi Throne.
Oh, I love Malachi Throne. He played opposite Robert Wagner in To Catch a Thief or Takes a Thief. He's a very fine actor, and I'm sorry he didn't know that. You know who else played the Riddler on Batman?
Who?
John Astin.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
That's right, he did.
Huh?
Can you name the three actors who have played Blofeld?
Oh, Blofeld? Pleasance was one of them.
Yes, very good.
I want to say Peter Cushing. No, the other guy, Count Dooku.
Dooku.
Yeah.
Well, Donald Pleasance is one.
Uh-huh. No. So
Telly Savalas.
Telly Savalas. That's right. Okay.
Played Blofeld in that bad one on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Uh-huh.
And Charles Gray played him in Diamonds Are Forever. He was the one that had hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
No. Donald Pleasance, by the way, reminds me a lot of my mom's husband. Not as in the Blofeld form, just in the way he
just worked. In the way he. Okay. Yeah. What year did Soylent Green take place?
Oh, I think it was either 1979 or 1999.
2022.
Oh, 2022. Then I got that completely wrong.
What is the creature called from this island Earth?
I can see it's got the giant bug eyed head and the two kind of clompy big circular hands. Do they mean the monster or the creatures with the big foreheads?
Well, it's the creature, they say.
Yeah, it has to be the guardian creature, whatever it is. I don't remember. I can see
the Metalunan mutant.
The mutant. That's right. The mutant. The
Metalunan mutant.
The Metalunan planet that they go back to. But
right.
Yeah.
How many brains does a Cylon commander have?
I got to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Cylon.
In the movie or in the TV show?
Exactly. Well, not in the movie. In the TV show from the 90s or the 2000s or the TV show from the 70s or 80s?
I think it's from the current one. I'm not sure.
The Cylon Commander has one brain.
According to this, the Cylon Commander has three brains.
Cylons have one brain because they're humans.
Okay. Well, how many brains does a Cylon Commander have? Three is the way it's put on this thing. Maybe that's wrong.
See? No, this could be. I'm sorry. It could be right from the TV series with...
Dirk Benedict.
Yeah, okay. That it could be right then because they scrambled that up a little bit. But the Cylons in the modern one were virtually identical to humans.
Here's a pop culture one for you. Uh-huh. What was the sequel to Blackula?
Return of Blackula.
Scream, Blackula, Scream.
Ah! Oh yeah. Oh God, I think I might have seen that.
You know.
Yeah. in one of those shitty theaters downtown Chicago in the Loop on like a Sunday. I mean, there were a bunch of shitty theaters around the Federal Building in downtown Chicago in the late 70s. They're all torn down now, but they showed awful movies like that. And it's quite possible that I saw Scream Blackula Scream.
All right. Where was Dawn of the Dead filmed?
Dawn of the Dead? I don't know. Detroit?
Pittsburgh.
So I was close. Right country.
My mother would not think you were close. She lives in Pittsburgh.
I mean, it's not Vancouver.
Okay. Yeah. It's not Vancouver. Mm-hmm. All right. And here are some literary questions from Purple Hymnal. You're going to get this one. Name the short story featuring an omniscient, omnipotent supercomputer that has kept five people alive since the end of the world.
I have no mouth and I must scream.
That's correct. Number two.
Who's the author? Harlan J. Ellison.
Harlan Ellison. All right. Number two. Who is Mike and how did he help the Loonies?
Oh, Mike is short for Mycroft. And Mycroft is the supercomputer that helped the Loonies overthrow the government of the moon and take possession of it in the name of freedom. And because they were going to be all dead in a matter of years. In The Moon is a Harsh Mistress by Robert Heinlein.
That's right. And the supercomputer is High Optional Logical Multi-Evaluating Supervisor, Mark IV, or the Holmes IV. Mm-hmm. Manny is a computer technician who discovers that Holmes IV has achieved self-awareness and has developed a sense of humor. So Manny names it Mike after Mycroft Holmes.
Yes.
And the information I have, Mike helps the Loonies fight a war of independence against the Earth. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. He helps them design a weapon they can use that basically throws rocks at the Earth.
Mm-hmm. And Loonies are moon residents who are basically on a prison planet.
Yeah, and they're like second, third, fourth generation, because once you're born there, you can't really leave. So it's a slave colony, essentially. Mm-hmm. And male to female ratio is ridiculous. And one of the things that Mike does is he helps them set up their underground and becomes the lunar president.
Ah.
He's able to fake a video of himself. It's very modern in the way it thinks about how what computers can do. It fakes an identity that is presentable on television and radio. It becomes their
leader.
Head.
Yeah. All right. What is the title? This is very obscure, and I'm not sure you'll know this one, but it's an interesting question. What is the title of the first science fiction novel that used cryogenics for time travel?
I'm going to guess it was a novel or short story. I don't mean that facetiously, but they mentioned if it's a novel or short story. If it's a novel.
Claiming it's a short story, actually, now that you say that.
The novel would be, a good bet would be A Door into Summer by Robert Heinlein by Heinlein. The short story would be The Marching Morons.
Okay, we have to go further back than that. Mary Shelley wrote a short story.
Really? I did not know that. Okay.
Roger Dodsworth, The Reanimated Englishman.
Oh, you know what? Come to think of it. H.G. Wells has The Sleeper Awakes.
Yep.
Roger
Dodsworth, this was an actual hoax that occurred during Mary Shelley's lifetime, where someone claimed to have found a frozen man in the Alps and from the 1700s and thawed him out. And so Mary Shelley wrote a short story called Roger Dodsworth, The Reanimated Englishman. Sees a man frozen in ice revive the present day.
And what TV show, probably from the 60s or 70s, considering my age, was based on a story like that? No one's going to get this. I swear. No,
because The Prisoner?
No.
That's a good guess. You got to admit.
It's a great guess. But this is was asleep in the ice for a century.
I don't know.
There was a show called The Second 100 Years.
Oh, I don't
remember that. Unless I'm just hallucinating, which is possible. Same premise. I haven't thought of that show in a long time. Probably 100 years or so. But
there is another futuristic Shelley novel called The Last Man, which is often cited as the first true science fiction novel. Oh, okay.
Well, Mary Shelley.
You said Frankenstein you thought was one of the first true
science fiction novels. Absolutely. And you know who she was married to?
No, I forget.
Percy Shelley.
Okay.
Yeah. She did Frankenstein in a Bed. They were all sitting around, presumably taking opium or something.
Yeah, smoking something.
It was about contemplating the larger questions, and she thought this would be a great novel. I think mm-hmm. she started off as a short story or something, but really worked on it, and she wrote Frankenstein. And it was, I would argue, the very first complete science fiction novel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, finally, what you might get this one. What was the last line of Neil Gaiman's acceptance speech for his 2002 Hugo?
Tonstoffel.
Oh, that's...
That's Heinlein.
That's Heinlein. There is no such thing as a free lunch.
Yeah. I don't know.
He ended his acceptance speech by saying, "Fuck, I got a Hugo."
That would be my second guess. My first guess would have been Death to the West, but
Death to the West. Yes, that's John Oliver's. That was John Oliver in what is that show over? Mock the Week.
Uh-huh.
They all had to come up with, you know, things you shouldn't say during opening a political speech. And he just walked over to the microphone and said, "Death to the West."
That was a wonderful quiz.
Yeah, that was I put that together.
Yes, you did. Thank you,
yeah,
Miguel.
You're welcome. And you got a lot of them right. So
yeah. Well, that was fun. It was challenging and interesting, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And I love you.
I love you too. Are you feeling okay? You want to take a break or
No, I'm good. I'm not sitting in the most comfortable chair in the world, but I'll be fine.
Okay.
Sure. Yes, I'm sure.